I just want to welcome you to First Liberty Live. You know, it was 1 year ago this week that a church in Kentucky wanted to hold an Easter service in their cars in the parking lot, but the mayor of Louisville, Kentucky said no. Hi, I'm Stuart Shepherd, and this is First Liberty Live. Thank you for sharing with us today and being a part of this. We do appreciate that you're part of this effort for us to get the word out about challenges to religious freedom all across America. And one of the ways you can be part of that is by liking and sharing our videos so that your friends get to hear these messages as well and be up to date on what's going on around the country. You are part of this effort, and we are thankful for you, so thank you for doing that in advance. Right now, I want you to meet Chuck Salvo. You kind of already did because we were chatting, because that's what we do. And Chuck is pastor of On Fire Christian Church in Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, Ron, or Stuart, how are you?
Yeah, Stuart. Ron's my brother, but yeah.
Well, actually, the lawyer you guys had work with me was Roger, and I happened to be looking at his name real quick, so.
Yeah. It's good to have you back on. We first met about a year ago when you were about, it was right before Easter Sunday. We're doing the same thing this year, which is why we're having this conversation, because it's been a year since the mayor threatened you. Let's go back and just recap what happened back then. What were you planning on doing and what happened next?
Well, you know, as we heard about the pandemic and this, we didn't know anything about it and what we were doing, and we had heard that people were talking about doing drive-in service. I said, you know, that's a great idea. So let's do a drive-in service. So we did that for about 2 weeks and were commended actually by the mayor at that time, by the governor at that time. And then all of a sudden things came down and we were outside. We said, well, we'll roll our windows halfway up. So we had our windows halfway up, people parked 6 feet apart from one another. And the mayor of the city said that wasn't good enough, that they wanted to shut churches down. And so that's when I contacted or was able to get a hold of you guys.
Now, you've been in the ministry for a long time. Have you ever had a mayor direct what you ought to be doing on a Sunday morning?
No, not at all.
So this is a new experience. Tell me how you got connected with Roger Byron, with our attorney here at First Liberty.
Well, Rod, what a blessing. I was under this weight because I didn't know exactly what to do. And my main concern was that I'm going to have service. I knew I wasn't going to shut down. So, you know, you're sitting there going, I'm about to break the law. What's going on? And Roger had inboxed and sent an email. And my daughter who's my administrative secretary, she had actually saw it. And she said, Dad, you might want to check this out. And so I just sent something back to him. And literally within 24 hours, we already had our feet on the ground beginning to go after and prepare our defense.
And this had to happen quickly because you were right there ready for Easter services that Sunday, and it went rapidly to the district court. And on Saturday, the day before Easter, Judge Justin, I want to make sure I get his name right, Justin Walker issued a temporary restraining order. I've got a quote from that I want to share. He included this in what he wrote. He did the opinion, but then he also wrote a long note with it that was very strongly worded, and this is just part of it. He says, on Holy Thursday, an American mayor criminalized the communal celebration of Easter. That sentence is one that this court never expected to see outside the pages of a dystopian novel. The mayor's decision is stunning, and it is, beyond all reason, unconstitutional. And I should point out that a few months after writing that, Judge Justin Walker moved from the district court to the Circuit Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. So he got quite a promotion there. We need more good judges there. Yeah. When you heard the good news that he was issuing the temporary restraining order telling the city to back off, what was your reaction?
Immediately I was like, what are we going to do? That was on Wednesday that we had heard this. So here we've got Easter service, the biggest service of the year, where we're able to minister to so many more people. And we found out on Wednesday. Literally, I contacted Roger on Wednesday. I think it was Wednesday. And he had on-the-ground lawyers in my office on Thursday.
And then on Saturday, this restraining order came out. And how did Sunday morning go then?
Oh, Sunday morning was awesome. We had gotten the response from the judge, and we were just rejoicing. Sunday service went awesome. We met outside. We still met 6 feet apart, windows halfway open. They tried everything to keep us down, but we you know, it went real well. The parking lot was crammed. We had people, you know, at the beginning of the service, somebody put nails out in the front of the area as we were leaving, trying to, you know, pop tires or whatever. But we just scooped them up, and we had some people yelling obscenities. Yet we had police officers driving by giving us a thumbs up.
Wow. What a morning. Yeah. Now, we often talk about these cases in real time. And I remember just a year ago when we had a conversation about this. But it's not ordinary that we get to then come back a year later and say, and then what happened? So give me an update. What did that change in the posture of the city against churches, thanks to the ruling of a judge, what did that allow your congregation to do after that and the Sundays that came after and, in fact, for the whole year?
Yeah, well, we kept meeting outside, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know exactly how long it was. It might have been another month or so or whatever.
Then the whole past year is a blur for all of us, frankly.
Yeah, right. And we just came back in, and when we came back in, the people were, you know, at that time, people still weren't understanding exactly where we were with the pandemic, this and that. And we came back in. We're meeting in-house now. We've been meeting in-house for quite some time. The church is growing. People are, you know, a lot of people are really kind of unsure of the future.
Yeah.
So we're seeing so many religious liberties shot down right now, and more so. And I was just asked to leave a restaurant yesterday. Maybe I need to talk to you guys after we get off. I was asked to leave because just a Five Guys restaurant, and I walked in. I don't wear a mask, and they said, "Do you have a mask?" And I said, "Well, I don't wear one. It's bad for your health." And they asked me to leave, and so I left and went to Waffle House.
I haven't been to Waffle House in a while. I'm kind of hungry now. Hey, one thing that always strikes me about these, the ruling was specifically about On Fire Christian Church.
Yeah.
But it changed what churches could do, not just throughout Louisville, but throughout that region of Kentucky, and also set a precedent for churches across the country. This was the first significant ruling concerning restrictions on churches during the pandemic. And it kind of set the tone for churches all over. How does it feel knowing that what your church did by standing up paved the way for so many other congregations, not just in Kentucky, but across America?
Yeah, I mean, I'm humbled. I'm just grateful that we did the right thing. You know, through the whole thing, Brother Stewart, my main concern was I never want to bring shame to the name of Christ. And so, you know, I had people, you know, the religious crowd saying, you know, in Romans it says, you know, obey governing authorities. But there comes a time that our governing authority, and I think many people forget this, is the Constitution. And when our governing authorities violate the Constitution, then I think we have a right as Christians to stand up and say, hey, there comes a time, and you know, I'm willing to go to jail. If they're gonna, I'm not shutting my doors, and I will not shut my doors down, even in the future. You know, we're seeing even more times where they're trying to push more stuff down our throats, and I think we need to stand up as a people and say, I'm just not doing it.
Yeah, and it strikes me with our form of government, an important part of it is the people speaking into it. It started with we the people. So if we feel that our government is out of line, our patriotic duty, and I think our biblical duty, is to speak into that government to try to bring things right again. That's our job and our responsibility as citizens to be able to speak into the very system of government that we have here in the United States.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, it's been a year, and it's gone to the district court, and now we're a year down the road, but we're still seeing churches that are having restrictions placed on them, and churches that are being told you can do this but you can't do that. In California for a while there, they said you can't sing in services, that kind of thing. What would your advice be to other congregations who are fearful of speaking out, fearful of stepping up and taking that next step?
You know, Stuart, I'm very vocal, and I'm vocal from my pulpit as well. I believe that pastors need to open their buildings, open their churches up. I personally believe that the reason we're in the situation we're in today is because most churches didn't do what the inner voice of the Spirit told them to do, and that's remain open. I think if we would have stayed open, we wouldn't be spiritually, because when we don't, our job as church people and churches is to create, if we could say this, a portal in the realm of the Spirit for the Spirit of God to descend in power in the culture. When we don't do our job, evil can triumph. And what I believe happened through this pandemic is pastors did not do their job. Therefore, it opened up a door for the demonic realm to have a heyday. And I think we're still seeing the results and possibly going to even see the results in the near future. But I believe God's word is true in 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people, now we said this a year ago, but now more than ever, because I don't think the church at large responded in the proper way. Church across the board, open your churches, defy any mandates, get your people in. My people don't wear masks. They don't want to wear masks. If they want to, I probably got one or two people in there wearing a mask. We know more about this thing than we ever did before in regards to it. So I understand people died, but nobody died of the flu last year. So it's just saying. And so I think we need to open our mouths up and open up and lead our people. You know, we preach as Pentecostal preachers that our God's a healing God, that he has power. But we, through this pandemic, everybody just went the opposite way and didn't get behind what they were preaching. And so I think we need to repent. We need to open our churches up. We need to lead the way as men of God, men filled with courage, and not be a coward to this false regime that's trying to propagate and dictate something that they've got no right to dictate according to our Constitution.
You mentioned earlier your connection with Roger Byron and working with him as an attorney at First Liberty. Tell me what that relationship was like. What was it like working with us through a process like this so that others can get an idea what it's like? That it's not as scary as they might think it is.
And I'm not saying this because you guys had me having me on today. Roger is just awesome. I've actually thrown some questions to him periodically, even afterwards, and he just takes the time to talk with me through the whole process. He took the time and to walk us through this whole thing. It was all brand new to us. I've been pastoring this house. I've been full time ministry for 25 years. I pastored or started this church 20 years ago in my basement, and I've never seen anything like this. Ever had to contact a lawyer. And so it was very nerve-wracking at the beginning because I wanted to make sure we were doing the right thing. Roger walked us through it. It was awesome, just awesome.
Tell me about some of the fears that you felt. You just touched on that a bit, but it's a scary thing to go up against a big city government with lots of attorneys in their stable.
Roger's funny because we go out and I'm talking. I didn't meet Roger until I think it was the day before. And it might have been the day after. I don't remember. We had all these other people jumping on board wanting to help out with Roger. And so I met the people on ground, the local law firm that you guys connected up with. Yeah. And by the way, the state senator, while I'm in my office talking on Thursday with the lawyers that you sent over, Mitch McConnell calls me on my phone.
The Senate majority leader at the time.
He was a majority leader at the time. And so anyways, that was wild. So when he found out I had a lawyer in, I'm talking to a lawyer about it, I think it kind of helped things along. Anyways,
And to be fair, Mitch McConnell wrote an encouraging note in yes. favor of your church and sent that to the mayor of Louisville, encouraging the mayor to back off and let you meet in your parking lot.
And then Daniel Cameron got involved, which used to work with Mitch McConnell, my understanding, and Daniel Cameron ended up making a phone call as well and actually brought a stern rebuke.
Yeah. Outstanding. Chuck, so good to see you again. Thanks for making time for us today. Good to see you.
Yeah.
We're always cheering for you. Here's something you need to know at home. You know, On Fire Christian Church never got a bill from us. That's how we work it. And you heard him talk about Roger Byron. That's the attorney who works for us. We also work with a nationwide network of volunteer attorneys, which multiplies the ability of our attorneys to work because our attorneys are specialists in this kind of law, and they work with the volunteer attorneys who are looking for an opportunity to do this kind of thing and to assist people just like Chuck Salvo and the congregation there at On Fire Christian Church. When you partner with First Liberty Institute, that's what allows us to do that. That's what makes it possible for us to represent churches and other houses of faith and Christian businesses or businesses that are operated by people of various faiths. That's what allows us to do that and stand up for our constitutional rights and to speak in both as a citizen and as a biblical citizen into the conversation and make sure that things are done in a constitutional manner. We are so thankful because it's through your generous support that we're able to do this. If you'd like to give, just click on the big red give button at firstlibertylive.com. It's easy to find, stands out on the page. You can also text to give. I think we put that up during the course of the program. You can text first to 474747, and that will take you to a page where you can donate as well. We also encourage you to follow us on social media. There are links for that. We're going to start posting. We hadn't done this yet, but we're going to start posting First Liberty Live on our Facebook pages. You'll be able to find previous episodes there, but they'll always be live on firstlibertylive.com. Next week is a very special outing. We're going to be on the East Coast at our annual fellowship gathering, where we bring in top students from all over the country and share with them the importance of understanding religious freedom from a constitutional perspective and how they can take part in that. We'll talk to some of the fellows, as well as one of the experts who will be speaking there, about how expertise is something important for us to exercise as people of faith living in a Christian nation. We will see you next week right here on First Liberty Live.